From Jefferson Public Radio at Southern Oregon University, this is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Off the top, another dry year in the Klamath Basin, another set of arguments over water allocations, and another pile of dead animals. With water scarce, thousands of ducks and other birds are dying. You'll hear where and what, if anything, can be done. Down the hour, Congress members from both parties like the idea of splitting up the former railroad forest lands in western Oregon. Mills would get logs, counties would get dollars. And environmental groups say we'd get clear cuts as well. After nine, a lighter interview with somebody who makes his living off the funny papers. Really, Francesco Marciuliano writes the Sally Forth comic strip and follows his best-selling book of cat poems with one by dogs called I Could Chew on This. All that and your phone calls and emails ahead on the Jefferson Exchange after this hour's news. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We broadcast live on weekday mornings and rebroadcast on weekday evenings on radio stations serving Oregon and California. And we're found online at jeffexchange.org. It's Monday, September 9th, 2013. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. In this hour, ducks and clear cuts. The ducks are suffering from lack of water in the Klamath Basin wildlife refuges. You'll hear just how little water there is and what's happening to the birds. Then you'll hear how clear cuts are being used, not by foresters, but by people who oppose them, to illustrate concern about federal forest legislation. You can join our discussions on the Exchange. We'll provide phone numbers and email address shortly. First, let's listen to a weather forecast from Jefferson Exchange producer Charlotte Duren.
On the Northern California coast today, patchy fog and sunny with a high near 67. In Redding and Red Bluff, sunny and hot with a high near 101. In Yreka, sunny with a high near 94. In Weed and Mount Shasta, sunny with a high near 91. On the southern Oregon coast, patchy fog and mostly sunny and windy with a high near 77. On the Klamath Basin today, sunny with a high near 86. In Grants Pass, Medford and Ashland, sunny and hot with a high near 96. On the southern Oregon Cascades and Siskiyou, sunny with a high near 80. In Roseburg and the Umpqua Basin, sunny with a high near 91. And in Eugene and Springfield today, patchy fog and sunny and windy with a high near 83.
Which might be the simplest weather forecast of the entire year. And if you look at the satellite imagery, you realize why. There's really nothing up there. There is a cloudless sky and across the entire state of Jefferson, with, of course, the exception of the coastal areas. And high pressure ruling once again. Looks like Medford could tickle 100 degrees this week as well as Redding. So we'll just keep an eye on the temperatures. And this is the time of year when you don't want to let the guard down. Yes, it is September. Yes, autumn is approaching. But it is still hot. It is still dry. We can still have fire. So we need to still be careful. Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you join us here. And if you'd like to take part in the conversations, you're more than welcome to do so. The phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And the email address, jx@jeffnet.org. The dry summer is stretching on a bit longer in the region, and dry is a kind word in the Klamath Basin, where the correct term is drought. It's officially been declared a drought and was several months ago. Allocating water to all the places that need it is tricky in quote-unquote normal years, and this is not one of those. Water is in very short supply. The concerns about impacts on fish and farmers extend to other creatures as well. Ducks and other birds are in rough shape in some of the refuges of the Klamath Basin National Wildlife Refuge Complex, where Greg Austin is the deputy manager. Greg, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Oh, you bet, Jeffrey.
It's good to have you. In the best of years, what happens to water in the refuges?
In the best of years?
Yeah, which this isn't, I recognize.
Well, on normal years, we would have some wetlands over on Lower Klamath, maybe 10,000 acres, and that would help spread the birds out. Under the KBRA, the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, as an example, in a year like this, we would be scheduled to have approximately 51,000 acre-feet of waters since February instead of zero allocation since February, which would equate to roughly 15,000 acres of wetlands.
All right, so the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement said you should have 51,000 acres?
51,000 acre-feet of water.
Acre-feet, okay.
Yeah, since February. And on this year, in this 2013, we've had zero water delivery since February.
simply because there's just been no water to deliver?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And this is primarily the Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge we're talking about?
Yes. Yes.
That's the major trouble one. Is the water then evenly distributed, Greg, across the several? And first of all, for the folks who don't know the whole complex, describe, if you would, the number of them and where they all sit.
Yeah, sure. Our refuge complex consists of six refuges: Clear Lake Refuge, Tudu Lake, Lower Klamath Refuges, Bear Valley, also Upper Klamath Refuge, and Klamath Marsh. And most of the refuges were set aside for wetland birds. And in particular, the refuges that we're talking about today are Lower Klamath and Tudu Lake refuges, which are adjacent to each other and essentially just separated by a ridgeline. And they're both set aside for waterfowl.
And is the situation pretty much the same in both Lower Klamath and Tule Lake?
No, the way the system is set up, the plumbing of the project, Tule Lake Refuge is at the end of the project. So during the water year where there are deliveries to the irrigation, it ends up at Tule Lake Refuge. So there is water throughout the whole Tule Lake Refuge, but we're essentially dry in Lower Klamath.
All right. And so the water is obviously not evenly distributed across the several refuges, and some do then get water while others do not.
Yes. Yeah. And Lower Klamath, you get water from two delivery points, from the Klamath River and or, which will be happening here on September 15th, we'll be pumping the Tule Lake Irrigation District, we'll be pumping water through the hill. Again, the way the plumbing's set up, Tule Lake Refuge needs to evacuate water. In the 1940s, a large pipe was plumbed through the hill, a mile and a half, and that water then makes its way to Lower Klamath Refuge. So on September 15th, they will start pushing water through the hill, and we will start to get some water in Lower Klamath Refuge.
All right. Now, but what has happened thus far, though? Is there really any water there now at all in the Lower Klamath?
No, we're essentially dry. We have started some wells on a small wetland unit to try to help prepare for fall migration, but it's such a large refuge that these wells, it's going to take a really long time, at least a couple months, to show any significant wetlands over there.
And so I understand the ducks have really been having a hard time at the Lower Klamath Refuge.
Well, they've all concentrated because of lack of water on Lower Klamath. They have a lot of them moved over to Tule Lake Refuge, and they're concentrating over here.
All right. Is there enough room for them over there? I mean, when we talk about them concentrating, we've seen the situation in previous years where there's just very little water left and all the ducks seem to be in one area.
Exactly, and that is exasperating the botulism that we have seen this year through by concentrating the birds in the way that the botulism, the way that it works in the system, that the way that the bacteria grows in the system with in low oxygen conditions and warm temperatures. So we have warm temperatures creating an environment for the bacteria to grow, especially in our wetland sediments.
Greg Austin is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Deputy Manager at the Klamath Basin National Wildlife Refuges. You can join us here in the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the issues, particularly on the Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge, with the great lack of water there and the effect on the ducks and other birds. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So do you have good numbers at this point, Greg, on how many ducks have died?
Yeah, to date, it's roughly, we've picked up about 6,000 birds. And the way, with the thick tules and cattails, we estimate that we can't get into, and the birds will move in there and die, we estimate roughly 10 to 11,000 birds have died so far.
And how does that compare? I mean, are some birds going to die in any year?
Yes, we usually do have botulism every year. But again, if there is sufficient water in the wetlands, the birds will spread themselves out and that will reduce the potential of botulism. And we can get anywhere from 300 birds to 800 a year if we have sufficient water supplies.
300, 800 dead, you mean?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so this is a huge number compared to that. Is this historically high, or is this just the sort of thing you expect to see in a drought year?
This is historically high, yep. The conditions are set up. So if it is if we had a drought year again next year, we could see something like this.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you mentioned the botulism, avian botulism, and does that just spread bird to bird? Is it spread through the water? How does that move around?
Yeah, it's a native bacteria that is in the system every year. But when the birds crowd and congregate, the bacteria can easily spread. And like I said before, warm temperatures create the environment for the bacteria to grow.
Well, it's a great medium for the bacteria.
It is, yep.
And how warm is the water?
Most of our wetlands are fairly shallow, so it warms up, high 60s. What we've seen recently with the cooler days and especially the cooler nights, that will help reduce the effects of the botulism. So we have seen it slow down over the last 5 days.
And Greg, you mentioned birds moving from the Lower Klamath Refuge to the Tule Lake Refuge. How long a distance is that for a bird to travel?
Oh, shoot. They could be from one refuge to another in 5 minutes. Just like I mentioned, it's separated by a ridgeline.
Are there some that don't make the trip for some reason?
From Lower Klamath to Tule, they could just start trying to move on to other places, maybe even down south into the Central Valley. But we are seeing, larger numbers at this time of year on Tule Lake Refuge. We have roughly about 100,000 birds on the Tule Lake Refuge right now. And I guess if we did have water over on Lower Klamath, we wouldn't see those larger numbers on this side.
So you said 100,000 birds now on the Tule Lake Refuge?
Yeah, yes.
And so what kind of pressure does that put on that? Is that more than its water load is able to sustain?
Again, that's just the concentration effect for botulism. If we didn't have botulism, there's still plenty of habitat for them and plenty of food. It's just the fact that we have this botulism going on right now that it makes it not favorable for the birds.
With the adjudication process that laid out water rights earlier this year, that put the Klamath Tribe on top and said Klamath Tribe gets water first, did the refuge move up or down the water right ladder?
We didn't fare all that well in the adjudication. As far as we have a couple adjudicated water rights, one for agriculture, and that one is, that's a 1905, and for our wetlands, it's a 1925. So we didn't get we were hoping for a 1908 when the refuge was established, but we did get a 1925.
And it really was a matter of deciding who came first and in what order.
The whole process of how the state determines where we lie. In a nutshell, it was determined when Lower Klamath was uncovered. That was when it was more or less dried up. It was state wetlands until the refuge was dried up, uncovered. And that was, they determined in 1925, so that's when we got our wetland water.
Right. Well, which, as you pointed out, is significantly later than 1908 and therefore puts you a little lower on the list. For the agency for which you work, Greg Austin, since, yes, you're a deputy manager at the Wildlife Refuges in the Klamath Basin, but Fish and Wildlife, the larger agency, does have a balance it needs to strike, doesn't it? Between you're trying to take care of birds for sure, but you also have to take care of fish and other critters. And so does it make the job that much trickier when you have a drought year like this and really no water to allocate?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Right now, the basin is running off of adjudicated water rights and also the biological opinions for the fish. And that's the legal framework that is running the water right now. And again, if we had the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, that does strike a lot more balance in the basin and very favorable for the refuge.
I know with fish in particular, because we've watched moves like at Elk Creek Dam when it was being built in Jackson County, where they were trucking the fish upstream of the dam site before it was notched to put the fish in a new place so they could reach old spawning grounds. Is anything like that ever done for birds? Anybody ever collect ducks and take them to a different refuge?
Well, with wings, yeah, we don't need to do that, thankfully.
You think, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. But are there
right now, actually, another compounding factor in the botulism is these birds are, over the last month and a half, they've been in molting. So they use these wetlands as molting areas. So they're dropping most of their flight feathers and growing new flight feathers for their migration. And so when we have botulism in the system and they're also molting, they're essentially flightless.
All right, so they really can't then move over to another refuge.
Yes, yeah, correct.
And so how long does that molting situation last before the flight feathers, the new ones, get big enough to allow them to fly?
A month and a half. In fact, and it's all different depending on the species. It's different timing, and a lot of the birds already have their flight feathers, so they're starting to move around. We'll start seeing a bunch of these birds already starting to move down in the Central Valley. But we are starting to see the fall migration kicking in, two birds coming from the north already.
All right, so there is movement, yes. Okay, so I've noticed geese and ducks moving west of the Cascades as well, so it doesn't surprise me that you're getting a bit of an influx there. Has anybody been out there to see this, any political figures? I mean, particularly since Congress was just in recess, did Greg Walden visit the refuges and see the dead ducks or anything like that?
No. It made as you're aware, it made the press a couple weeks ago. It's been going on now for about 8 weeks. But no, I think folks are aware, and everybody's aware that we do need balance, and folks would like to see the refuge get their adequate supplies of water. Again, it just turns into where we're at in the legal framework right now.
The refuge is obviously not just birds. Are there other critters affected by what's happening to the ducks and the lack of water, the almost complete lack of water in the lower Klamath?
Oh, sure. We have river otters, pond turtles, all other, not just water birds, all other types of migratory passerines, the smaller birds. It's really something to see the large area like that essentially dry and driving through it and the lack of wildlife using it.
The rains that fell west of the Cascades last week, was there any real measurable precipitation in the Klamath Basin?
I heard that rains like that do benefit the inflows to the lake. As far as putting it onto a dry wetland, it doesn't do anything on lower Klamath. It really doesn't. We need a significant amount of water. As an example, to get an acre foot of water and have a foot of water standing on top of 1 acre of wetlands, we would need 3 acre feet of water. So we need roughly 3 acre feet of water to get 1 foot of water standing.
Because the other two would be absorbed by the ground?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the plants, yeah.
All right. And is that the standing thing just when you have a dry wetland, the standing formula?
We just use a 3-to-1, yeah.
Wow, that's good to know. Do the refuges have a seat on the task force that is set to report back to the governor and Senator Wyden this month, that Klamath Basin Water Task Force?
We're invited to the general meetings. We're not in any of the breakout groups.
All right, so not really helping develop policy then as part of that task force, it sounds like.
Not our office, no.
Okay. And long-range forecasts of the fall, I mean, you think you would have normally seen rain about now, or does it look several weeks further away than you might have expected?
Oh, shoot. for the number of years I've been here, this seems fairly normal. We're hoping, again, with the we expect roughly about 10,000 acre-feet to pump through the hill. So that will get us, 3,000 acres of wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bureau is looking closely at how the lake's reacting to the water year and if there's looking at possibly potentials of deliveries in the future this fall, sometime this fall.
All right. And you said the pumping should start September 15th, which is what, Sunday?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, perhaps that'll provide some relief, but not soon enough for the up to 11,000 that you estimate are dead in the way of ducks over there in the Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. Greg Austin is the Deputy Refuge Manager. Greg, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You bet, Jeffrey.
Good to have you. Bottom of the hour, here is Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 9th of September, 2013. It was on this day, 1830, first American aeronaut went up in the air. A man named Charles Durant made his first balloon flight, took off from the Battery in New York City, flew to Perth Amboy, New Jersey, a trip of about 25 miles, a very exciting thing in 1830. A huge crowd came out to see him. 20,000 persons, according to the New York Post. They've done this all before in Europe, in Paris, almost 50 years before the first manned balloon flight. There was another flight in America, 1793. President Washington came out to watch that one, but the aeronaut was French, Charles Durant, the first American to go up in the air in 1830 from Manhattan. He dressed in a top hat and tails. The flight took about 3 hours. He landed in a farm field owned by a New Jersey farmer by the name of Johnson, who was properly surprised. And in 1831, Durant published an essay describing the flight. He said, "Here burst upon my sight one of the most imposing views I have ever beheld, the white fleecy accumulation of clouds piled in waves as far as the eye could reach, covering the earth. Above me, nothing but a clear expanse of blue, the golden sunbeams spreading over the vast ocean of clouds and extending through immensity of space." It's the birthday of Leo Tolstoy, born into nobility near Tula, Russia, in 1828. He spent a lot of time gambling and drinking and hanging out with women as a young man. Finally, his brother suggested that he sign up for the army, and so he did, joined his brother's artillery unit. He was 23 years old. He was sent to the front to fight in the Crimean War and was horrified by the violence of it. And in 1857, Tolstoy witnessed a public execution in Paris, which affected him deeply as well. He said, "When I saw the head part from the body and how they thumped separately into the box, I understood, not with my mind, but with my whole being, that no theory could justify this deed." He wrote a novel entitled 1805, using his experiences in the Crimean War, though he made the novel about the French invasion of Russia. He wasn't satisfied with that novel, so he rewrote it and expanded it and gave it a new name, War and Peace, the first three sections of which were published in 1867. And it's the birthday of James Hilton, the novelist, born in Lancashire, England, in 1900. Published 10 novels in the first decade of his career, didn't get any attention. Then he wrote Goodbye, Mr. Chips, about an old beloved schoolmaster. And when the book came out in the United States, it became a huge bestseller, followed by another one, Lost Horizon, about an imaginary Tibetan village called Shangri-La. Here's a poem for today by Sherman Alexie, entitled Grandmother. Old crow of a woman in bonnet sifting through the dump, salvaging those parts of the world neither useless nor useful. She would be hours in the sweat lodge, come out naked and brilliant in the sun, steam rising off her body in winter like slow explosion of horses. She braided my sister's hair with hands that smelled of deep roots buried in the earth. She told me old stories, how time never mattered, When she died, they gave me her clock. Poem by Sherman Alexie, Grandmother, from The Business of Fancy Dancing, published by Hanging Loose Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Writer's Almanac here on the Jefferson Exchange. Let me give you a little note about something coming up. JPR and the JPR Foundation invite listeners and members from Humboldt County and surrounding areas to join us for a public reception Friday evening, September 20th at 7 at the Eureka Theater in Eureka, California. This is part of our board meeting in the area, but this gives you a chance to learn about current and future JPR activities and question JPR staff and board members. That's September 20th at 7 at the Eureka Theater in Eureka. The Jefferson Exchange continues in 1 minute.